We've been doing a series on the Noble Eightfold Path. And I have one more handout. And I quite like to have something visual, like a map or overview, just to give people a sense of what we've been doing. Because this is a drop-in class, so some people you can drop in and out. But it's good to just get a little connected up to an overview of what the theme is, and the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path emerged out of the Buddha's very profound enlightenment experience. So that's at the top. Out of that came his teaching of condition co-arising and the Four Noble Truths. So there, in a very short summary, there it's what the Buddha taught out of his enlightenment experience to address the human condition, condition of suffering. And what we've been dealing with the last few, the last 2 months or so is the Noble Eightfold Path, which is his prescription. In a way, you could almost say it's a map for how to live your life that emerged out of, I guess, the first stage, which you see under perfect, the Noble Eightfold Path is perfect vision, which ultimately would be the experience of enlightenment, but is a different experience on different levels depending on how we're approaching it. And we've gone through all these different limbs. So there's this path of vision and path of transformation, how to transform our lives in line with, I guess, what we can glean of a vision that's resonates, I guess, with the Buddha's enlightenment experience. And that can be from a very mundane experience of just having some suffering in our life and wanting to live our life differently, to having a, for lack of a better word, some kind of mystical or very deep spiritual experience that kind of galvanizes us to want to know more about the spiritual life. And this, you just don't go through this path once. It's a very profound teaching that as we practice the threefold way of meditation, ethics, and wisdom, so that's kind of the overarching teaching of Buddhism that this falls under. We understand it on deeper and deeper levels. It has been described as like a rolling of a snowball that gets that grows and expands all the time, and it's a cumulative process. I also like it, the comparison. There's a comparison of the spiritual life as embodied by the Eightfold Path as being like the growth of a tree. And our teacher would describe it as a development of a tree. First you have a sapling rooted in the earth, and then one day the rain falls, perhaps quite heavily. The rain is absorbed through the roots of the sapling. The sap rises and spreads into the branches and twigs, and the tree grows. There is a pause, and then again the rain falls, again the sap rises, and this time not only does it spread into the branches and twigs, but leaves begin to unfold. If no rain falls for a time, the tree may wither a little, but eventually more rain comes. There may even be a cloudburst, a downpour. And then not only does the sap rise into the branches, twigs, and leaves, but flowers begin to unfold. The following of the Eightfold Path is like that. So I find that a really beautiful image and quite true to that experience. At times, it doesn't seem like anything's growing, or sometimes we wither a bit. But if we keep up this this practice of regular effort, something does grow. And tonight, I'm starting just looking at the last limb of the Eightfold Path. On this sheet, it's described as perfect meditation. Sudhika will also be following up on this next week. It's also known as perfect concentration. And the word in Pali and Sanskrit is samadhi. And samadhi means it's a state of being firmly fixed or established. And this word samadhi has been understood and interpreted in two ways by different Buddhist traditions, but also can be understood that way in two ways by herself. First, it could mean the mind firmly fixed or established on an object, as in a concentration. But secondly, it could be the whole being firmly fixed into the state of enlightenment. And that latter one makes sense as a culmination of the whole path of transformation. However, I think I'm going to focus tonight more on the former, concentration, because you could say the more advanced the state of spiritual development, so our teacher says, the less there is to say about it. When it comes to samadhi, meaning enlightenment, we're dealing with something that's beyond the conceptual mind. So there's some things that can be said about samadhi, there are teachings, but I was thinking that it might be more useful that we look at more deeply at what's meant by concentration. So I'll be concentrating on concentration tonight. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how many here find it easy to say concentrated in meditation or outside meditation. It's not an easy thing. If you'd like to progress in becoming more concentrated, I continue to want to progress in becoming more concentrated. I think when we really consider concentration and what it means, it can take us to some very profound truths or issues. First of all, it's said that a concentrated mind is a happy mind. I'll quote again Sangharachita. He says, "The happier we are, the longer we are able to stay concentrated. And conversely, if we find it difficult to stay concentrated for very long, the reason will be we are not happy with our present state. If we were truly happy, we wouldn't need to do anything else. We could just stay still. But we are unhappy and dissatisfied, so we get restless and go searching for this or that." Now I say that's a little, people might find that a little provocative. We may not agree with this. For example, we could have a lot of pleasure and enjoyment in our lives and feel that things are going our way. We still may not be able to get completely concentrated in meditation. But this relates more to more of a Buddhist view of happiness. And I guess one of the essential Buddhist questions, can we be truly happy through the enjoyment of external mundane things that are always subject to change and impermanence? And I guess the Buddhist answer is no, we need something more than that. So one key to understanding what we mean by perfect concentration is that the pleasure or happiness that arises in meditation through concentration is not dependent on external sources, nor can it be come about through pushing away or grasping our inner experience. This brings us into a very interesting area. And in terms of everyday life, we need to be able to distinguish between mundane pleasure and happiness and deeper spiritual happiness to become more motivated to practice. So one of the ancient texts of the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, if by giving up a lesser happiness, one could experience a greater happiness, a wise man would renounce the lesser to behold the greater. That's always worked and appealed to me. I think I'm more of a carrot kind of person. I think the Buddha's approach to pleasure is quite important in the spiritual life, that we needn't be afraid of pleasure, the right kind of pleasure that can nourish and sustain us in our practice, and to help us go deeper is very important. So what do we give up? I suppose pleasurable distractions in our day-to-day life that we know at core don't truly satisfy us. In order to be motivated, we need to find something or to be convinced that there's something more deeply meaningful for us. And this will come about as we practice meditation more and more. I've noticed when I practice meditation more deeply, and find it more satisfying, it's easier for me to let go of these things that hook me on distraction. Before, I went away for a couple of weeks over Christmas, so I was really hooked on these YouTube American sitcoms, and they were really quite nostalgic for me, and I don't know. But once I spent a lot of time meditating. I was lucky. This cat sitting by the sea. I spent a lot of time meditating by the sea, and by the end of it, something really dropped down. Not at all interested in it, and my meditation has really dropped down. There's a lot of deep tranquility and pleasure in it. But that came through, you know, giving more attention and space to meditation. So our external conditions all have an effect on finding that satisfaction in meditation. And I'll just say another thing. Concentration doesn't mean forcing. It has been described as actually a gradual unification of one's energies around a single point. So I quite like this sense of more of a gentle coaxing rather than forcing and overriding. So we can get this image of concentration. I know I get it with some cartoon figure with knit brows and steam coming out of their head. And really, the effort we make to concentrate is much, much more fluid than that. I quite prefer the word absorption to concentration, because absorption feels a lot more open and, you know, brings in a sense of enjoyment for me. In the teachings of the Buddha on meditative absorption, he uses images that I find, you know, really capture the sense of, I guess, bringing together, unifying energies of what's there. And one of the first images the Buddha uses when we can let go of the distractions and move a bit beyond the more strong distractions is this image of soap granules and water being mixed up. And in the Buddha's day, that's how they made soap. And there's this sense of, I quite like this, so every little granule counts, so every bit of our experience counts, but then we sort of are open and let it be permeated by this type of awareness we bring to our meditative experience. So it becomes more and more unified, and I get the sense of, it's something quite satisfying and pleasurable to me, is something, the soap absorbing and being permeated by the water and becoming soap. And then he has many more beautiful images for going deeper, but perhaps Asutika might touch on that next next week. And to apply the amount of effort for this quite subtle thing of permeating our experience, perhaps with the object of meditation, takes a lot of patience and practice and trial and error. It's actually an art, but it takes practice like anything, and it takes giving attention to it, like what we're doing tonight. And the Buddha taught the middle way in practice, and this applies to everything, including my own long experience of meditation, which has gone through a number of phases. So I was thinking my first phase, I veered to making too much effort, so a bit of the knit brow approach, and I was very disciplined and quite literal about meditation. And then in my second phase, I just sort of flopped or became a lot more open, and that balanced it, but then I became a bit too vague, and I think, and now I'm just trying to bring it together. And so there's a lot of trial and error that goes in, but I think what we need to get in touch with is our motivation. Does this connect us with something meaningful and important to us in our lives? So in a bit, we're going to do a reflection on that. There's a quote from Franz Kafka that I really like, that to me brings to mind, you know, the quality of receptivity, so to balance the effort that we bring in meditation. And what he says is, you do not have to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Be quiet, still, and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. So I'll read that just one more time. You do not have to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Be quiet, still, and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. So I guess you could say that meditation could stand in here for being quiet, still, and solitary. And this quality talks about listening and waiting. Is that quality of receptivity, a bit of what I brought into the first meditation of just kind of being with whatever is there in a very open, empathic way. And I really like the word unmasked he used in this quote, because meditation, I think, leads to a certain type of unmasking or laying bare through bringing a quality of attention to what's going on and how we can distort things and how we create our own suffering often, or how we can create it. So we can focus on, I guess what we need to cultivate more is a focus as a gentle coaxing in midst of a broad receptive awareness as to what's going on. And also, as I brought in the first meditation, letting go of expectations, just trying to come to meditation fresh every time, which is easier said than done, you know, because we have to build in a routine too. And I think as humans, we tend to get a bit stale with routine. We need routine, we need practice, but then it can become a bit rote. So that's as much as I'm going to say at this point. I would like just to do a bit of practice, first of all, around reflecting on our meditation. And I'd like for us to look a bit more deeply at one of our main practices around absorption and concentration, which is the mindfulness of breathing. So the mindfulness of breathing is a concentration practice, which traditionally is known as samatha, but it also can be an insight practice as well. It can be practiced in many, many ways. So just by being with whatever is there in the breath, insights and our experience, insights can naturally arise as well. But I think tonight, as we're looking at it as a concentration practice, I'm just going to have us experiment with the last two stages. But I'll say something about the first two stages, which is, you know, I think you could see them as training wheels, those first two stages with the counting. You know, we could see it as a beginners, and we've got the training wheels, and we're counting the breath. It's getting us used to it's an anchor. It's a tool that helps us to stay with the breath. And sometimes, you know, as we practice, we might be encouraged to experiment. I think it's always good. And sometimes people get stale around the counting, and they might drop the counting. I know sometimes I do that. But over the years, I've come back to the counting. I mean, it may not always work for you, but over the years, I come back to the counting. I think no matter how much you meditate, if we're immersed in the world, we're just bombarded with distractions. And I like to come back to that counting. And there are lots of different tips that can be helpful. And I'll just say one tip I find really helpful. And one is just physically counting on our fingers. There's something about that physical contact for me that really kind of breaks through all those distractions I'm trying to let settle. So those are that's one aspect of the counting in those first two stages, and then we're also bringing some understanding of the what our focus is of the meditation, which is the breath, which I guess it's a very profound focus for our meditation. We walk around every day breathing all the time, and we don't really think about it. And so there's this unpacking in the first and second stage of qualities and emphasis and the two modes of breathing. So there's the in-breath, there's the out-breath, first of all, where we're letting go and kind of connecting with that quality of letting go and relaxing. And then there's the in-breath, which is bringing focus and awareness. So we're not going to practice those right now. We're going to move on, though. I was interested in exploring the third and fourth stages tonight, because I think they're good examples of working with breath in meditation, the third stage, and then focus, the fourth stage. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to lead us through, first of all, reflection on the motivation, you know, what motivates us to practice, and then gradually move us into a way of doing the third stage that might have a little bit of different emphasis than you usually do. So, but there are many ways to do the third stage, so this is kind of a suggestion. And then do a bit of the fourth stage. And then we're going to have a bit of discussion about it. Okay? So, So taking some time to settle. Again, using that contact with the floor, cushions and chairs through the feet and legs as a type of grounding, connecting back with the meditation in the first half. Helping us to settle. Connecting with our breaths. And perhaps imagining we're breathing in more space, a sense of spaciousness, calm and stillness. And that's widening into a sense of sitting by a great still lake, expanding all around us. And we're going to drop a reflection into that lake like a pebble. So just one question, and we're going to let that drop into that lake and listen for whatever comes back. Might be nothing comes back, but or something comes back later, maybe not now. But it's important to ask this question about our motivation. So we're going to ask, what motivates us to practice meditation? And whatever that answer is, that's our answer. So what motivates me to meditate? There might not be a word answer, might be an image. Anything might arise in response to that. With this listening, we're going to bring in a quality of open, non-judgmental awareness for wherever we are, in relation to this question, or however we are right now. Then we're going to bring this receptivity a bit more in focus on our breath. So however our breath is right now. And on the in-breath, we're going to bring a bit more focus and open awareness to our experience. And in the out-breath, letting it go into openness. So turning towards our experience on the in-breath, letting go on the out-breath. And we could continue doing the third stage, the mindfulness of breathing in this way, or else carry on whatever way feels right for us right now. And then we're going to move from this broad awareness of the breath to a narrow, more narrow focus that we have in the fourth stage. So the point where we first notice the breath entering and leaving our bodies. Bringing an awareness of whether we're getting too tense in our concentration. how we can keep a sense of enjoyment and flow around this focus. And then letting go of this effort. We'll just sit, making no effort for a moment, just being with our experience. One thing I meant to mention is it's kind of like coming into a sense of a dance with whatever is there in our experience and the focus, which obviously takes some practice, but it's kind of a spirit we want to bring to it. I thought perhaps we could just spend a little time talking to a neighbor, probably just the person next to us, and just maybe. If something came up around our motivation or anything about that practice, just talk for a bit or a couple of minutes. That would be nice to hear from everybody.